Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by my NBC Sports Chicago teammate, Rob Schaefer. And somewhere lurking in the background is voice of God, Uncle Tony, Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we are going to break down the Bulls' impressive offensive performance in their victory over the Charlotte Hornets. Also, we are going to take a brief look at the Bulls' first quarter of the NBA season and preview a two-game trip coming up against the Knicks and the Nets.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
This is Lonzo Ball, and you're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast.
All right, Rob, we are not doing the late night duty tonight because you are a little under the weather. You're playing hurt. You're like Zach LaVine. Hopefully you have a 20-point game in your 20-point game performance in your future here on this podcast. We are taping this the morning after a very ill Zach LaVine, a very active Nikola Vucevic, and a supercharged Lonzo Ball led the Bulls to a 133-119 victory over the Charlotte Hornets. Rob, we didn't break down stuff as much as we usually did because we were not as much communication last night. So you and I haven't even talked about this game. What did you think of that offensive performance last night?
Well, I thought it was the best offensive performance of the season, for one. Season high in assists with 35, that magic number, that magic mountaintop gets reached. 59.6% field goal shooting up in the mid to high 40s from three, which is an area that this team has been up and down from a volume perspective this year. Obviously season high, 133 points in the first half. They rode a flurry to get to 69 first half points, which were tied, I think, a season high with the second half against Boston at the time for points and a half. So it just seemed like a needed breakout for an offense that, if we're going to, you know, nitpick the Bulls' first quarter of the season, it's that the offense has at times gotten stuck in the mud and stagnant. It just seemed like everything was flowing and fluid. The ball was pinging around. There were transition chances. There were highlight reel plays. The United Center, I wasn't there, but I'm sure it was rocking. So overall, team-wide, offensively, I think it's the best the Bulls have played this year. It was good to see. And obviously at the center of that, no pun intended, is Nikola Vucevic, Casey, who you wrote about last night. So I'll tee that up to you. But to see him break out with 30 points, six threes, I think the Bulls tweeted out this morning that him and Kemba Walker are the only two players in NBA history to, I think it was, score 30 points and make more than five threes without a miss. So talk about a breakout. That's near a historic performance. But even beyond the shooting, I mean, the ball was just finding him in the right places on the interior. He looked a lot more comfortable. You could see his confidence growing throughout the game. He had some tough moments defensively in the first quarter that I think he ironed out as the game went along. You could just see his activity, like you said earlier, and energy kind of ratcheting up as the game went along. So great game for Vooch, great game for the Bulls offense as a whole, great game for the big three, big four, however you want to term it, between DeRozan, Zach, Vooch, and Lonzo Ball. Those four combined for 99 points and I think 25 assists. So all around, you know, other than that brief stretch at the beginning of the fourth quarter where the zone seemed to confound them, as that particular defensive coverage has a couple times this season, it was a pretty sterling, you know, hard to nitpick offensive performance. It was just everything you want to see from this team.
Yeah, so I want to focus on two guys, the one that you mentioned, Vooch, and then I also want to break down a little bit of Lonzo Ball's game, because, you know, we've seen what DeMar and Zach have done all season, and we've to some extent seen what Lonzo did last night all season, but obviously he's a storyline because of him facing his brother. But Vooch, we have not obviously seen what he did last night with any level of consistency. And you've touched on it a little bit, but I did write on it at NBCSportsChicago.com and on the My Teams app. I thought Vooch's post-game session with us was fantastic, because he's kind of touched on all those points to some degree in singular effect, but never stringing them all together and to the cumulative power that he had last night. And what he touched on was how he is adjusting to a new role and how it has been difficult for him not getting the ball in the post as much. He's not complaining. He's a team first guy, but this has been a wing heavy attack where he's been up at the top of the key, forward facing more often than not. And, you know, it's a smart usage of him because he's such a good passer and he's historically a good 3-point shooter, but it hasn't been working to this point. His 3-point percentage jumped from 28.3% before the game to 33.3% after the game with that 6-for-6 performance. So that was good to see, but I think it's very telling how pointed and public Billy Donovan has been about the need to get Vucevic in the post more. Now, that's not throwing it down in the post and, you know, watching him go to work for 7 seconds while guys just kind of read him. That's not what Billy Donovan's talking about. What he's talking about is getting him touches with ball movement, with player movement, but him down in the post. Now, you know, the elephant in the room is that Vuce has struggled from up close to this point in the season. He's missed a lot of bunnies, a lot of little 6-foot jump hooks that he typically knocks down. But just the fact that it's so out there now with public and their need to kind of get him more in areas where he's comfortable to work is really jumping out to me, because I think the optimal version of the Bulls, obviously, is Vuce, you know, being more of Vuce. He's not going to be what Vuce was in Orlando just because they have got other number one options, but he's got to be more than he has been to this point, and you saw a glimpse of that last night.
Yeah, and frankly, he can't even really be what he was down the stretch of last season with the Bulls, when the Bulls became the most post-up dominant team in the league, and it kind of coincided with the season slipping away a little bit and the offense taking a dip. Now, obviously, Zach LaVine misses 9 games with COVID in that stretch, so that's a factor too. But I thought it was, like you, Casey, telling to hear Billy talk about the need to get Vuce more post touches, not in a way that's going to bog down the offense, but just to let him or allow him opportunities to get in his rhythm. Because for the last decade, he's been one of the more, you know, post heavy guys. Everything's run through him in the league down in Orlando. So hopefully that can be a little bit of a boon for him. The one thing I'll also say about the post up stuff is, and you saw it last night, when he's on, when he gets that, you know, first mid-range jumper to fall and then the three on the falling down DeRozan assist, when he's rolling and he draws two in the post, like, he's always going to find the right guy. It seems like he was picking out spot-up shooters. He picked out Caruso cutting a couple times last night. That monster poster on PJ Tucker lost in that play is Vuce, you know, putting it on time on target to him as he's diving to the rim out of the post. So that's an added benefit of doing that, but finding the right balance to do it. And I think what's important about what you said about the percentage jumping, it's kind of a reminder that we're a quarter of the way into the season, but the sample size is still not colossal here.
Right.
It's even less because of the COVID time that he missed. So they're still finding that balance, but you know, this is easily the biggest positive development for his season. That wasn't, oh, he hit a few big shots down the stretch against Utah, or, you know, there were glimpses here, there were flashes there. Last night was the first kind of full 4 quarters that he put together where he looked like Nikola Vucevic and looked like he was adapting reasonably well to some of the new patterns of usage that the Bulls are putting in. So it was good to see.
He looked like an all-star, which is, you know, I mean, that's what he is. I mean, he may not always be a perennial all-star, but he's a two-time all-star and he's an all-star caliber player. He's in the conversation every year. He looked like an all-star last night. And I'll close by saying this. He was in such a to show you where his mindset is at. And, you know, Vuce is always a positive, upbeat, open, transparent, honest guy. But at the end of his session with us, he even talked a little smack about USC hiring Lincoln Riley. So, you know, you can tell he's in a good frame of mind. So we'll move off Vuce and get on to Lonzo, because we have seen, you know, Lonzo in supercharged mode often this season. And, you know, the fact that both he and LaMelo, and you talked to LaMelo at the Hornets shoot-around, I talked to Lonzo at the Bulls shoot-around, you know, downplayed's the wrong word. They had their meeting and their matchup in perspective. You can tell they appreciate it. They savor it. They respect it. You can feel the love between them and their family and the way LeVar raised them to play the game the right way and unselfishly, but they didn't get too wrapped up in the individual matchup. And we've seen Lonzo play with that force before, But I don't know, man. It was electric last night. I mean, those first couple possessions, they were matched up together. I was actually looking at my computer. I had to look up because there was palpable, like a shimmer and a crowd roar in the United Center. It was amazing. I was like, what's going on? All of a sudden I looked up and it's like Lamar dribbling the ball up court against his brother. I mean, the crowd was so into that matchup. And, you know, they know each other's games so well. It's so fun to watch. They're both electric players. LaMelo had, I want to get this right, 18, 13, and 7. And I didn't even think he played well. I mean,
he certainly didn't shoot well.
Yeah, he shot 5-15. He was in and out of foul trouble. So was Lonzo with some horrific calls, by the way. And I'm not one to comment on officiating much. But he had three of his four fouls were one-on-one against his brother. And two were just downright wrong, and one was borderline at best. Lonzo had some fun with that afterward. But I don't know, man, that matchup, especially with these guys kind of in their right places with their respective franchises, and now they're in the same conference, it's going to be around for a while, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch because those two guys going at each other is good theater, man.
It's cool. And like you said, they took it professionally, and with how kind of exposed they've been in a media sense, being in the public eye since they were, you know, young kids, you know, you see that exudes off of Lonzo, like in his media dealings. It does with LaMelo a little bit too, in a bit of a different way. But so you can tell that they treat that matchup professionally. They don't let it get to their head, but it was cool to see them matched on each other for a lot of the night. LaMelo actually got Lonzo a couple times. He got him with a snatchback three. I think it was in the third quarter. He got him on the first possession of the game. He blew right by him. He just missed a layup that he probably makes 9 times out of 10. But then, like, to your point about knowing each other's games, it would be interesting to hear Billy Donovan in a candid moment maybe ask him, how much of a luxury is it to be able to throw your defensive-minded starting point guard at this tremendously gifted offensive point guard on the other end? And there's nobody maybe in the world that knows his game and his array of moves better. It is kind of a funny dynamic. And you saw it, I think it was sometime in the second half. I can't remember if it was in the third or fourth quarter exactly. But that block that Lonzo had on LaMelo on that right-handed layup, if you watch the replay of that, like, he's so patient. He keeps his hands low until the last moment. And you can tell that he just has it timed so perfectly. And Lonzo does that to everybody. But it's funny with the context of, oh man, that's probably happened, you know, a million times in that in the backyard back in California. So that was a cool matchup. What's cool about the matchup too, regardless of whether they're siblings or not, they're two of the most, you know, flashy, not in a bad way. They play with the most flair. They, you know, incite the most exciting play style, you know, of any two point guards in the league. So the game had moments of being very up-tempo and very highlight heavy and very fun. And, you know, whether it was passing or Lonzo hitting four threes, it seemed like a lot of times they were at the heart of that. Who do you think won the matchup, Casey? Lonzo got the W. So to me, that's all you need. Even though LaMelo outscored him, Lonzo gets 16-8 in a win and the block.
And Lonzo said that. He said, we won the game, right? So that's all that matters, right? So, yeah. And you know, Lonzo to me was more efficient. I mean, he shot a better percentage. LaMelo had probably, you know, a gaudier stat line and maybe some flashier moments, but Lonzo was just so solid throughout. And 16-8 is, you know, when you got three guys scoring over 20 points on your team and you still have 16-8 and you play the defense you do and you shoot the percentage you did, I'm giving the W to Lonzo, both team wise and individual wise. But I think it's fantastic. They're in the same conference.
What'd you think of Vooch saying post game that he wants his kids to be the next Ball family coming up?
He's got to wait a while. Those kids are young. Yeah. So.
I don't know if they all go to be 6'11" and, you know, they're getting trained by a guy as skilled as him, you know, it could be a kind of inverted Ball Brothers thing. I guess the Lopez brothers have already kind of done that. But
yeah, so yeah. That can be your storyline. I hope to be retired by then. So thank you for for reminding me about my exit plan. But anyway, let's briefly touch on the quarter mark of the season because, you know, it's kind of bled from probably last Friday's pod to this Friday because it actually officially occurred at halftime of the Heat game. That's the 20.5 mark. I'm a stickler for detail, so that's exactly 82 games. Bulls on pace going into tonight, last night, for 51 victories. I don't know what their pace would be now, probably somewhere in the 52 to 53 range. I don't know if they're going to get there. I think there are a lot of bumps probably to come in the road, and their schedule does get tough like all schedules do at times. But look, man, it's clear that they're going to be a viable competitive team throughout this season. I mean, whether they get 50 wins or not, to me, they're, you know, a shoo-in for a playoff team at this point, you know, assuming health, of course. And I wrote about the top three reasons from my perspective that they're on this pace at our website, NBCSportsChicago.com. We don't need to go on through all three, but I'll tick them off and you can pick which one piques your interest the most, Rob. To me, it's DeMar DeRozan's effect, clearly number one reason, both on and off the court. I think not only his incredible level of play, but his impact on Zach LaVine and kind of optimizing who Zach is and kind of alleviating some of Zach's burden has been immeasurable for this franchise. That's number one. Number two, clearly the defensive havoc caused throughout the team, but most notably by Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso. And then number three was just, you know, the buy-in team-wide to the sacrifice that we talked a little bit about before that Vucevic and others have had to do and that the coaching staff's getting because, you know, Billy Donovan and his staff are switching rotations, switching roles, both injury-based and, you know, emergency-based and just tweaking rotations. And everyone's just been professional. It's a very serious-minded group. They don't get too high after good victories. They don't get too low after losses. They're just – and to me, that kind of ties it back a little bit to DeMar. DeMar, to me, is such a calming, poised presence. He's got such an impact on this franchise. So those three are the big reasons from where I sit. What's your response to that, Rob?
Well, let's go DeMar because we've got a peg to him from last night's game too. I mean, 28 points, and it almost felt, you know, subdued or you know, under the radar because of Vooch's breakout being the big storyline. But DeMar shooting 8 of 12 from mid-range, 12 of 20 from the field against Charlotte. And again, like you say, a steadying force, a stabilizing force. His shot-making, although he hasn't been as much of a facilitator as he was in San Antonio last year, like maybe we expected in the half court. Last night you saw him get going a little bit with Vooch in some pick-and-pop actions. I think that chemistry can be massive for Vooch and obviously the Bulls' half-court offense. And, you know, while at times the isolation stuff, I think, can, you know, stagnate things a little bit, he's also saved the Bulls so many times with just absurd shot making, foul drawing. He's made this team into a much improved group in terms, again, of the free throw line, which was a big point of emphasis in the offseason. I think they're ninth in turnover rate as of today. So that's a huge improvement from last season, obviously. So there's the on-court imprint. And then off the court, I think everything you just said about it being a serious-minded group, it's a collective thing. You know, Caruso contributes there. You know, Zach LaVine contributes there. Everybody on the roster contributes there because everyone's bought in. But DeRozan from the first Zoom press conference when he signed, has set an unmistakable tone with the way that he speaks about this team and about how he speaks about expectations and how he speaks about kind of what work it takes to be the type of team the Bulls want to be. And so I think he's just been phenomenal. You know, I haven't checked in with kind of the MVP ladder, as it were, but he's still got to be a top five candidate with the amount that the Bulls are winning, maybe not up in the, you know, Steph Curry tier, cause he's running away with it at this point. But you know, for all the consternation in some circles for the signing in the offseason, and I was one that thought that it was a bit of an overpay in terms of assets and dollars. He's just been phenomenal, just completely fully exceeded any, you know, price tag, you know, trade package that you want to put on him. He's just been completely a revelation for this team. So that's where I'd go. I don't know if you want to build off that, Casey, or maybe go to Caruso and Ball, because I think their additions too have really, you know, anchored the defense in a way that's a little strange in the NBA. Like, usually you think defensive anchor, you think conventional, you know, towering behemoth in the middle, rim protector. But these two have really, you know, inverted the way that, you know, I at least think about defense with their multi-positionality and kind of activity and disruption. That's been pretty fun to watch too.
Yeah. I'll briefly touch on Caruso. We've kind of talked about Ball's defense already. Yeah. And then I want to move on to previewing the two game trip before we get up out of here. But, you know, Caruso to me just kind of fits into, you know, forget the on, well, we'll touch on the on-court stuff. I mean, because obviously he leads the NBA in steals and deflections, or he's in top two. I haven't looked this morning, but he's just been, you know, completely everything as advertised defensively. Such a physical, undeterred force. His screen navigation is unparalleled. Just so annoying. I mean, he's just always there, always in your face. But I want to tie it. I, you know me, I like to go for the broader, like, personal themes away from the analytics. I like the eye test. And just to me, like, just his he ties to me and to DeMar's presence because he's won a championship. He knows what it takes. And you talk to this guy, like, after victories, after losses, he's always the same. He's just like, we got to get to work. We got to get better. And it's not even like we got to get to work. Like, it's just like, that's just what the way that he's wired. Like, all right, let's go see what we did right. Let's go see what we did wrong. Let's improve incrementally every day to get to the finish line. That's what championship DNA is all about. It's looking at each day and building off that day to get better the next day. And, you know, DeMar hasn't won a championship, but he's been to a conference finals, played at a high level for those Raptors teams for so many years. Caruso has been around, you know, a guy who's won many championships. And, you know, that's his LeBron James influence has certainly touched Caruso. And Caruso's bringing that to it. So it's as much the defensive impact as it is what he's doing off the court for the present. It's just, I said before, it's a serious-minded group. It's just about the work. And that's what's jumping out to me.
And on the court too, a leader, just in the sense of calling out coverages, you know, making sure the little things are paid attention to in a big way. So he's been massive. And all the stuff that was talked about, you know, executives and teams generally, they really, you know, you sign a big free agent. It's, you know, billed as a big addition to the team. You sell him. All the stuff that was said about him being a high IQ player, defensively being in the right places, him and Lonzo's interplay between each other is so fun to watch if you could take the time to really focus on it. And also his passing and his playmaking, especially in transition, he just processes the game at a speed that if you weren't watching the Lakers over the last couple of years, you might have known about his defensive reputation and that he's an improved three-point shooter. But that to me has been a huge revelation too. It's allowed the Bulls to not only be a team that forces a lot of turnovers, but capitalizes off of those turnovers when they're at their best. So for him to come in and have such a presence, like you said, Casey, off the court, but also on it, has been phenomenal. I love the signing when it was made, but he's even exceeded what I think, you know, the most positive, you know, pro Caruso person could have expected. He's just been outstanding.
To show we're not just throwing all hosannas here, his three-point shot has tailed off a little bit. He's actually picked it up the last couple of games, but he's at 34%. A 37% career three-point shooter and coming off a career high 40% last year. So it would be nice if he knocked down a few more open shots, but that's just, you know, to make sure we're doing our checks and balances here. This is all positive. You mentioned the MVP ladder before. One guy who is not on the MVP ladder is Kemba Walker, who has fallen out of the rotation.
That's a heck of a transition.
How's that for a podcast transition, baby? He has fallen out of the rotation for Tom Thibodeau's Knicks, the Bulls' next opponent. They leave for the two-game trip. Kind of cool NBA scheduling quirk. Second time this season they've done it. Bulls were in L.A. for a back-to-back against the Clippers and Lakers. Now they go to New York for Knicks and Nets with a day off and a practice in between. I will be in New York. Looking forward to going there. Obviously, I already faced both these teams, 1-1 against the Knicks and 1-0 against the Nets. What are you expecting on this two-game trip, Rob?
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, like you said, these are teams that the Bulls have already beaten, but you know they've split two with the Knicks, and the Nets were rolling a little bit when they came into the United Center, and the Bulls obviously routed them in the fourth quarter. But it's a team you're not going to catch on too many off nights when their stars are playing at a high level. Although Joe Harris just went down for an extended period of time, that's a big blow for them. So what am I expecting? I think at least a split from those two games, and you can feel pretty solid. The Knicks, it'll be interesting to see what their new starting lineup looks like, because I think when they visited the United Center most recently, it was kind of at the height of fan consternation over the starters playing so much more poorly than the reserves. They've obviously made not only a change to the starting lineup, putting Alec Burks in Kemba's place, but knocking Kemba out of the rotation altogether. So I'll just be interested to see what that team looks like. They just beat Atlanta on Saturday. That's a pretty good win. So if they've turned over a new leaf and come in energized, I think that matchup looks about as tough and grimy as their first matchup of the year did at the United Center. The second one was back and forth too, but the Bulls ended up with that one pretty firmly in hand by the end. So interesting trip. Enjoy it. Oh, and one thing I should also mention, the Bulls, with the defensive adjustments that they made on Julius Randle in the fourth quarter of their second matchup, I'll be interested to see how much they're able to limit him. You know, size is a topic that gets talked about a lot with this group, but they were really timing their double teams and traps well against him in the fourth quarter of the last game. He was kind of ripping them apart through the first three quarters. So whichever Julius Randle the Knicks get, or whichever Julius Randle the Bulls force Julius Randle to be, I think will also be a big determiner in that one. But it'll be a fun trip. I always, you know, it's good for the Bulls to get wins over, you know, the Orlandos and bank W's against teams that they're supposed to beat. But for us to really, you know, evaluate this team for the ceiling that they flashed early in the season, you got to watch these games all the more closely.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, you know how I feel about sports predictions. I find them incredibly stupid. And, you know, we're just guessing like everybody else. I always say that's why they play the games. But the fun thing is, like, you just go into this two-game trip with just expectations of, you know, or you're expecting both games to be incredibly competitive. And, you know, that's not something you could say in recent seasons for the Bulls when they go face two playoff teams and one being an elite, you know, championship contending team. So it's going to be a fun trip. They always are. And as I mentioned, I will be out in New York and we'll be podcasting on the off day from out there. So looking forward to that. So for Rob Schaefer, I'm Casey Johnson, and we hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. Rob's going to go talk to Zach LaVine about a echinacea prescription or something like that. Until next time, guys, take care.